We're in the, at the end, Colossians chapter 4, looking at verse 7. And this is Paul. We're closing the book down. And what's interesting here, and I hope I can do a good job of covering this material, because it's just a lot of, just like a list of names. It's a greeting. But what you notice here, the background of some of these guys, when you dig it up, they went through some stuff with Paul. Some of these guys they're always showing up in the background, but they're with Paul at the riot in Ephesus. They're with Paul in Thessalonica when Paul comes for the first time, and they kind of stay with him. They're on the boat with him coming in going across the Mediterranean. They're in prison with him now. And so anyway, that map on the back of the page kind of shows you where everybody's at. Paul is in Rome. Under house arrest. It appears he's in chains because he signs this letter. The last thing he says, he signs his name and he says, "Remember my chains." So it appears that the book was dictated, and Paul's dictating maybe to Mark, John Mark, the scribe is there, the one who wrote the book of Mark, the one who wrote for Peter. John Mark, or somebody has been writing down Paul's dictation, and then at the end, Paul takes up the pen, writes his name, and says, "Remember my chains," which is kind of interesting because possibly when he picks the pen up, he's writing his name like this, with the chains jingling, potentially. I mean, it's right there in his greeting. And so that's what's happening. And the people that are with him in Rome, you can see on that little map is, of course, Paul, Demas, who's going to desert Paul eventually, Aristarchus, Mark, Jesus, who's also called Justice, Epaphras, the pastor who's come to visit from Colossae, Luke, the doctor, and then Timothy are all there in Rome. Two people are going back to Colossae, Tychicus and Onesimus. You know Onesimus, that's the slave that ran away from Philemon. And Tychicus is going back. He's from Colossae. And so he joined Paul, and he's been traveling with Paul. And we're going to see a little bit about where Tychicus has been and what he's seen in Paul's adventures. And he's heading back with the letter. And possibly also taking with him a letter to the Laodiceans. There's this letter to the Laodiceans hanging out there that we don't know anything about. We just know there's a letter to the Laodiceans. The assumption is Paul wrote it. The assumption is they're maybe taking it with them. But it could be a letter Paul wrote a long time ago. It could be a letter Peter wrote that he wants them to read. We don't know who wrote it. Just there's a letter that the Laodiceans have. And again, I think Tychicus is carrying it with him and Paul wrote it. But that doesn't say anything like that. Over in Colossae, we've got Archippus, Philemon, and Apphia. Philemon is the owner of the house. The man whose slave Onesimus ran away is coming back. Apphia is his wife, and we see that in the book of Philemon. Her name doesn't come up tonight, but we do see it in Philemon. And then Archippus, which is apparently, Paul's going to tell him to finish the ministry that the Lord has assigned to him. And again, that's all we know. There's many assumptions. Archippus is the pastor that is filling in for Epaphras, who has left to go talk to Paul about the conflicts in Colossae to get some advice. And Archippus is filling in for him. We know he's got a ministry. We know he's got a word from the Lord or direction from the Lord. And Paul encourages him to finish it here tonight. So Archippus, Philemon, and his wife Apphia are in Colossae. Onesimus is coming back and will be joining him. Now, in tradition shows that in 68 AD, during Nero's persecution, Paul's going to die in the fall of 67, spring of 68, be decapitated in Rome under Nero's reign. And Nero himself is going to commit suicide in 68 BC or AD, a few months after he executes Paul. But before his persecution comes to an end, Archippus, Philemon, Apphia, and Onesimus. So Philemon and his wife, Archippus, the pastor apparently, and Onesimus, the returned slave, are all executed. They are all stoned to death in Colossae under Nero's persecution. So it's interesting that this book being written at this time is really setting the stage for some of these people to get ready for their own martyrdom. The people are going to die for their faith. Anyway, that's kind of where everybody's at right here. Some things I want to see as we go through this. is notice Paul's ministry team. Those people in Rome, that is his traveling ministry team. I mean, some of these guys are with him all the time, are coming and going. Luke is a doctor. Mark is a scribe. There's an entourage that travels with Paul. And remember on Sunday, we read a verse on Sunday in church about when Paul arrived on the coast. See, there's a little dotted line on the... He arrives on the coast and the coast there in Italy. And the church of Rome came out to meet him and then brought him back in. You know, they went out to meet him like, you know, that's the word. And that's the same word that says, we will meet the Lord in the air, you know, go up to meet him. And so I just wanted you to see that's those where they met him at the three taverns and they went right by those places there as they led him back into Rome. So that's just kind of interesting right there. Okay, let's go to the notes on the first page. Any questions here as we wrap this up? Okay. I'm going to read the rest of the book, chapter 4, verses 7 through 18, and try to read this, and then we'll come back and go through the notes. So here we go. Chapter 4, verse 7. Tychicus will tell you all the news about me. He is a dear brother, a faithful minister, and a fellow servant in the Lord. I am sending him to you for the express purpose that you may know about our circumstances and that he may encourage your hearts. He's actually got four assignments right there. We're going to talk about those four things. Tychicus is coming, and this is what I've told him to do. He is coming with Onesimus. Well, that's like a fifth thing. He's returning the slave. Our faithful and dear brother, who is one of you. And he's described as our faithful and dear brother, who is one of you. Kind of describes Onesimus. They will tell you everything that is happening here. Now, one of the things on the notes, if you look on the notes, the third bullet point down, is that these are not mere idle greetings. Say hi to this person, say hi to this, you know, can't wait to get some of that, you know, good, you know, potato salad or whatever. These are written in a way that they're strategic comments, you know, like finish the work the Lord has given you to do. And he gives these guys titles. He identifies them. He's like maintaining relationships. He's positioning people. He's like a chess master, if you would. Here's this individual's name, and I describe him as this way, this way, and this way. And he's positioning him as far as in a chess game in ministry. He's making relationships or maintaining relationships with certain people. They're not just idle comments. One thing that's interesting is Timothy's not mentioned. I mean, we know Timothy's there. Timothy's there in the greeting. But Timothy doesn't say hi to anybody, you know. Timothy wants to say hi to Fred, you know. Nothing like that. Timothy is not in this because Timothy is not part of this strategic play. Paul's got him on another game board somewhere. But nonetheless, verse 10. My fellow prisoner, again, that's important, fellow prisoner. I'll tell you right up front. That's a word, fellow prisoner, or Aristarchus. Aristarchus comes from Thessalonica. We're going to look at all this here in a moment. And it appears that we can trace it. And I hope we do a good job tonight. But we can trace, you know, in church on Sunday, we're going through the book of Acts, and then Paul went through Thessalonica, went down to Athens and Corinth, and wrote the 1st and 2nd Thessalonians up there. Aristarchus is from Thessalonica. He's a Jew from Thessalonica. He apparently picks Paul up in Thessalonica, and he's going to be with Paul throughout a variety of things. Aristarchus, this person right here, is going to be one of those people in church we're reading 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. He is one of those Thessalonians who would have received that letter. So all the things we're reading in 1st Thessalonians, Aristarchus would be the one on the receiving end reading 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. And then he's going to join Paul in his ministry. He's called fellow prisoner. That word fellow prisoner is a reference to, it's used for prisoner of war. It doesn't mean a legal prisoner. It doesn't mean a criminal. It doesn't mean my fellow criminal, Aristarchus. That's not what it says. My fellow prisoner of war. So you understand, it changes things. You know, a legal law or a criminal compared to a war criminal or war prisoner. That's the word. My fellow prisoner, Aristarchus, sends you his greetings. As does Mark, the cousin of Barnabas. You have received instructions about him. If he comes to you, welcome him. And that is probably a huge relationship building, mending, bringing things together. Because everybody probably knows, we even know 2,000 years later, that Barnabas and John Mark had a falling out with Paul. I mean, a big break. And they've come back together, and Paul puts in there, when you've received instructions, somehow they've already received instructions from somebody, maybe from Peter, maybe from Paul. If he comes to you, welcome him. He's back on our team. He's back. You can even see, you talk about, you know, different churches being pitted against each other, different ministries or different doctrines, you know. You can even see in here, these even Barnabas and Paul kind of went two different directions. Are we going to keep John Mark? And part of that is going to be that circumcision, you know, because John Mark and Barnabas were both strong Jews from Jerusalem. I know Barnabas comes from Cyprus, but they split right at, I mean, the split appears to be because John Mark went back to Jerusalem. But why did John Mark go back to Jerusalem? If you know, there's all kinds of ideas. You know the story. When they enter into Asia Minor, they go across Cyprus, they go up to Asia Minor, and John Mark says, "I'm out of here." Why was he? I've said before, he was too young. He was inexperienced. He was afraid. He missed his mom back in Jerusalem. These are all ideas. But if you put it in perspective, what was the heated issue, theological issue at that time was what? Circumcision and Gentile ministry. And John Mark coming out of the heart of Jerusalem from a wealthy home in Jerusalem, right there where Jesus had the Last Supper, where the Pentecost, you know, the Holy Spirit came. John Mark is right there in the midst of that circumcision group, right? And they're up there and they're crossing that line. They're going to Asia Minor. We're not circumcising people. We're not. What are we doing up here? We're just. It's like I'm adding this to it. I mean, we don't know. We just know that John Mark goes back home. And was he afraid? Was he missing mom? Or was he saying, theologically, I'm not down with this. I'm not going to be baptizing people that aren't getting circumcised. Or I'm adding that. Was that part of the issue? Because right now, notice, you have received instructions about him. If he comes to you, welcome him. So whatever that division was, and I don't know what the division was, but Paul is saying they're back on our team. They've now come back in. And that time when they broke up, the issue was circumcision. Galatians, the Jerusalem Council, ministries. Well, look at this. If he comes, you welcome Jesus, who is called Justice. And again, Jesus would be his Jewish name. Jesus is the Hellen. Now, this is going to sound redundant. Jesus is the Hellenistic name for Joshua. Just like Paul's name is Saul, Paul, Hebrew name Saul, Gentile name Paul. Jesus Justice, his Hebrew name is Jesus, which is a Hellenistic form of Joshua. So his Hebrew name is Joshua, who is called Justice. Justice is his Greek. Just like there's Saul, Paul, there's Jesus Justice. And so that's what's going on right there. It sounds like he's got two Hellenistic names, Jesus Justice. But Jesus would be the Hebrew name that's just become Hellenized. And again, we don't know anything more about Jesus Justice than what I've just told you. Jesus Justice, Jesus who is called Justice, also sends greetings. He gets to say hi. Timothy doesn't get to say hi. And Timothy wants to say hi to a couple people. But Jesus Justice, and he's throwing that out there for some reason. Well, here might be the reason. These are the only Jews among my fellow workers for the kingdom of God, and they have proven to be a comfort to me. These are the only Jews. Of everybody that's with me, these are the only Jews that have stuck with me. These three men, Mark, Aristarchus, and Jesus Justice, these are the only three. And he says, and notice what he calls. He doesn't call them Jews. It does here in the NIV. NIV does. But in the text, they're of the circumcision group. They're from the circumcision group. And some of your translations may say that. They're the only ones of the circumcision group referring to them like that. Jesus, called Justice, also sends his greetings. These are the only Jews among my fellow workers for the kingdom of God, and they have proven to be a comfort for me. Now I'm way ahead. I'm teaching. I'm not even reading it like I said. See, I made a mistake. But anyway, I'm teaching this. Since we're going through this, the word comfort is an interesting word. It comes from extract from opium that was used for in a syrupy form. They put it like in a liquid form. It'd be used for a cough suppressant. It was used for anti-diarrhea. If you had diarrhea, it would be used for that. It'd also be used for a painkiller. So this is a medical term, a technical term for a drug that'd be in a form of painkiller or a cough suppressant. And he says right here, they have proved to be a comfort for me. In other words, in his struggles, they have provided, well, comfort's a good translation. It's just interesting. They're like a medication for me. They're a suppressant for me in my situation, being locked up in chains, trying to run the church. Imagine Paul with this amount of people that he's got in his ministry that have followed him, followed this rabbi Jew all the way to Rome. I mean, the guy, we know from other stories, he's not rich. He's not influential. He threw away his reputation. He's got no reputation. He's got no, you know, he didn't graduate from any kind of a school that they're going to recognize. I mean, he is now a reject from the Jews. And he's over in Rome, and he's still got this group of people following him. And, of course, he's got a lot of things that he's lost. He mentions that in Philippians. The things that he's counted as lost, he says, I've lost all these things, but I know what I'm doing. I'm doing something important. These are the three right here that provide him some kind of comfort. But he does say they're the only three. The only three Jews that are with him on this. And again, his ideal of being in his ministry, going to the Gentiles, bypassing circumcision, bypassing the law, going straight to the Gentiles with Jesus Christ, faith in Jesus Christ, and establishing his church. These are three Jews. And realize there's others, Jews, that have accepted Christ, but they're not leaving Judaism. They're not leaving the law. They're going to bring, either the Gentiles have to come to them, or they're going to take the law to the Gentiles so they can become Jewish. Now, you know, the Jerusalem Council in 48 AD answered that question. James is on Paul's side. Peter's on Paul's side. But there's a lot of them, and a lot of them are hunting Paul down. Paul's not only got trouble with Jews in general, he's got trouble with Jews who are believers because they don't agree with his doctrine. Okay, Epaphras, who is one of you, now this is the pastor of the church of Colossae, who's come over. And let me just read this. Epaphras, who is one of you and a servant of Christ Jesus, sends greetings. He, in other words, he's left you, but he's not coming back yet, but he does say hi. He is always resting for you in prayer. Now, again, here you've got an absentee pastor over in Rome. Where is our pastor? Oh, he's over here with me. First of all, they're not on vacation. They're not, you know, at the, you know, nice hotels having, you know, some kind of a seminar on church growth or something. They are in prison. But notice what he still is absent from them. And so Paul now kind of plugs him. He says he hasn't abandoned you. Watch what he says. He is always wrestling for you in prayer. And that word wrestling is another word would be struggling. We get our word agonize. It's an athletic word of what goes on in the gym, you know, the athletic, you know, the wrestling and the competition. It means he is always wrestling or agonizing in prayer for you, that you may stand firm in all the will. I want to come back and talk about this. That you may stand firm in all the will of God, mature and fully assured. Notice those things right there. That is what Paul writes in the first chapter or two. That is what he is praying for them also. And Epaphras is now praying that same prayer. Epaphras is basically praying the book of Colossians for his people back in Colossae. I vowed, now here's another one, verse 13, I vouch for him that he is working hard for you, meaning keep him on the payroll, he's still working hard for you here. And that word working hard, it may refer to the praying and what he's doing, but the way it's written, the commentators will say that it speaks of something more than just he's praying for you, that, you know, he's thinking about you all the time, you know, is that he's actually, some kind of work is going on. And has worked for them before. But notice what he says, I vouch for him that he is working hard for you and for those at Laodicea and Hierapolis. Now, if you look on, again, I'm way off my notes here, but if you look on the third page, I've got a little map if you need reference, a refresher. I know we've talked about this before. This is the coastline on page 3 at the bottom. There's that coastline of Asia Minor. Just off that, you can see where Ephesus is on that map, right? And just to just if you draw an arrow just to the, I'll just say southwest, that's Patmos right out there. I mean, I just cut it off the map, Patmos. But if you go from Ephesus, you go to the right or go to the east, there you can see Laodicea with Hierapolis to the north and Colossae to the south. And they're in the Lycus Valley, Lycus River Valley, they're right there. A lot of these people are from there, and these three churches are fairly united. They mean they're sharing letters, they know each other very well. And you know, from Laodicea, we know the story of them sharing water. They get water, even, you know, when Jesus writes, or John writes the church of Laodicea, he refers to the cold water and the hot water, the cold springs. The hot springs coming from the north from Hierapolis, and the cold springs coming up the valley from Colossae. And by the time it got to Laodicea, it was putrid water. It was still lukewarm. But those are those cities right there that you can refer to again in Revelation chapter 3. But nonetheless, Verse 13 of Colossians chapter 4, I vouch for him, for Epaphras, the pastor of Colossae, that he is working hard for you and for those at Laodicea and Hierapolis. Three groups of churches there. Our dear friend Luke the doctor, and we know about Luke, and Demas, who's going to desert Paul in 2 Timothy chapter 4. It says, because Demas loved the world, sometime in Paul's... Demas is still with Paul in his second imprisonment. He's with him here during this first imprisonment where Paul is released. Paul writes 2 Timothy from his second... in 67 A.D., right before his execution. At that time, Demas was still with him, or Paul was counting on him, and he tells Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 9, he's deserted. Because he loved the world, he's left me. So Demas doesn't stick this out. And Demas send greetings. Luke and Demas send greetings. Give my greetings to the brothers at Laodicea and to Nympha and the church in her house. Now, what you have here is that he says, greet my brothers in Laodicea and Nympha and the church in her house. Potentially, I mean, I think everybody agrees, I think, in the commentaries, these two churches are two churches are in Laodicea. You've got the church of the, I'll just say it this way, the church of the brothers in Laodicea, you know, the brethren church. But then somewhere in the city, you've also got the church of Nympha's house. So you've got two churches in Laodicea. Apparently, a lot of times we get the idea of there's, you know, these church houses, and they were their houses meeting, churches meeting in homes. But then you think about places like Ephesus. I mean, these are Corinth. They're huge cities. I mean, unless you've got a group of 50 or 100 or 200 people, and they were houses that could probably house that many people. Some of the very rich people had houses that big. But that's not near the amount of people that are in some of these cities, like Ephesus and Corinthians. And so here is a pretty good indication that in Laodicea, you've got two churches. You've got the church of the brothers that meet in Laodicea and another church over at Nympha's house. So I think that you can read that a different way and study that, but I think you have a reference to two different groups of people meeting in Laodicea. Or more. There may have been more. The brothers in general, and then there's a particular group of them that meet at Nympha's house that Paul maybe stayed at or spoke at or something. Well, we can't say that because he was never in Colossae. I'm sorry. Verse 16. After this letter has been read to you, the letter that he sends to them, see that it is also read in the church of the Laodiceans, and that you in turn read the letter from Laodicea. And the assumption is that Paul's written them a letter and that they're going to read it too. And that the issues in Laodicea are different than the issues in Colossae, but you can still learn from each other. You know, like this letter to the Colossians is not a letter to the churches, it's a letter to the Colossian heresy, the thing that's going on there. But everybody can benefit from it. Like for us, we can benefit from it. So can Laodicea. And Laodicea had their own issues that Paul addressed, if we assume Paul wrote this letter. And I think that's a safe assumption. But wouldn't you like to have that letter? We don't have it. It's nowhere to be found. There is, if you look it up and Google it, you will find the letter to the Laodiceans, but it's a forgery. It's clear. Everyone knows it's a forgery. Because wouldn't you know there's going to, in 2,000 years, if we can't find the letter to the Laodiceans, someone's going to write it for us. I mean, someone will provide the letter to the Laodiceans. And someone did early in church history. They forged that letter. But you can see here how the early church, how they function. When they would receive this letter from Paul, they would read it to the church. They'd gather together and the letter would be read. And then, now there's one copy. I mean, my thought would be, well, Paul, why don't you just run a copy of the letter to the Laodiceans for the Colossians? It's like, why? Right? He's got two copies, or he's got, you know, the letter to the Laodiceans and the letter to the Colossians. Gives them to Tychicus and says, "Take." Well, what happens if the ship sinks? What happened? I mean, where's these letters? But there's two copies apparently, one of each. Maybe Paul kept one for himself. But the idea is they would read it, and that what the churches would do, and you know this, the churches would have the letter, they would read it, maybe they would keep the original, and then they'd copy it and send it to someone else, or someone from another church would come and copy the letter to take it back to that church. And that's how the copies began to be made. They'd start copying these letters. They weren't mass producing them. They weren't running them off on a Xerox machine, but they would copy them. And so right here, it's hard to imagine that the Colossians would have this letter that Philemon or Epaphras, or Aristarchus would receive this letter from Paul and then read it to the church one Sunday and then hand it to someone from Laodicea and says, well, make sure you get it back to us when you're done with it. It's like, you think they would make a copy, and that's what they would do. They would make a copy and send the original, or they would keep the original, and then someone would make a copy and take it to the other church. And so they're making these copies of these letters. Anyway, that's a great study right there, because then you start realizing that some of these churches, like the Corinthian church, they've got two letters or maybe four letters from Paul in their library, and these. They became apostolic churches in the 1st, 2nd, 3rd century. They became very important. Okay. And then 5, verse 17, tell Archippus, and this is apparently what I'm going to say, and other people do too, but we don't know for sure. Archippus seems to be the guy that's taken over the church, because here's what he says. Tell Archippus, see to it that you complete the work you have received in the Lord. End quote. He said, see to it. This is what you're supposed to do. Now, what the work in the Lord is, Archippus knows. We don't. And he's received a word or direction from the Lord. Archippus knows exactly what he's supposed to be doing. And Paul's just telling him, you finish that. You don't take your eye off your assignment. Well, what that is, I don't know. I'm going to say, as many people do, Archippus is the leader of the church. And he's to oversee that church of Colossae that meets in Philemon's house. We don't know. In verse 18, now here, I, Paul, write this greeting in my own hand. And right there, that's where the dictation would stop. I, Paul, write this greeting, and that's where the writing would change. That'd be the nice type-looking, you know, the official scribe writing in the nice, neat columns. Paul takes it, and now he writes his own greeting. He says, I, Paul, write this greeting in my own hand. Remember my chains. And that might be right where, when he started writing, that's where he remembered his chains. That's kind of hard to write my chains on. You remember my chains. I just realized that's hard for me to write. And grace be to you, the typical greeting there. Okay, that's that portion right there. I want to go back to the notes. There's some things I kind of want to draw out of this, and let's see if we can hustle through this. Yes, ma'am. See, it could be. It could be, because when you think about it, he's under house arrest waiting for his trial. And he's got a soldier or guard with him. I think we can say that in other texts. But people are free to come and go. In the book of Acts, people are coming. Jews are coming and arguing with him, and he's preaching to them and stuff as they're debating there in Rome. The Roman church is probably accessing him because they went out to greet him. They brought him in. So the Roman Christians are coming to him. So he's not like chained up in a dungeon somewhere, clearly. He's in his own rented apartment. But then you get these ideas of the chains. Yeah, are they metaphors? He just says, I'm just held here. But he does have a guard watching him. There is a guard stationed there. It could be that he's chained because he was on a prisoner. He was from Caesarea. He was in prison in Caesarea, put on a prison ship with other prisoners. And so he's been in chains maybe since he left Caesarea, been in some kind of chains. It goes both ways. Yes, Jim. Yeah, I think I don't have the Greek with me, but from what my study today, and again, I'd have to go back. I want to go back and check. From my study today, my assumption was that he was referring to chains, not just imprisonment. But if the New American Standard has imprisonment, it'd be interesting to check that. I don't know what the, what's that? Oh, right. The house arrest, that comes out of Acts. You know, I mean, that's what it says, house, that he has own rent. He wasn't in a cell. He rented an apartment. So he's still got to be, he's paying rent for an apartment space. He's waiting for his court case. So, yeah. No, it's not, but it's, yeah, I wish I would know. I just assumed it was chains because of some of the other, but I hate to come again. I don't know. I don't know what the trans. I don't know the Greek right there. I'd have to look it up. Does anybody have their Greek New Testament with them? Okay, they didn't bring them tonight. Okay. Hey, I have seen a couple guys preach, and when they get done and they sit down, and you look at their Bible in the pew, they don't have an English translation. They are preaching and translating as they read this, and they go and they're reading Greek, translating on the fly. It's like when I see it, it's like I want to be that guy, you know. I'm not, so don't. All right, let's go back to this. chapter 4, verse 7. Tychicus will tell you all the news about me. Now, I've got written down here on the notes. I'm going to go try and go through my notes to get some kind of order out of this. I've got first the 12 names of the 12 people that are involved in this greeting. Real people. And when you read some of the things that these guys are going to go through, it's pretty amazing. I hope I can take you through that here. There's three churches that are involved in this, and we've mentioned those: Hierapolis, Laodicea, and Colossae. Now, go underneath there where it says 4:7, Tychicus. Tychicus and Onesimus, these are their assignments, right? They're there's the third bullet point down. It says, one, they're going to carry and deliver, maybe even read the letter. Maybe Tychicus will do the reading. I'm on page 1, about a third of the way from the bottom. Next thing they're supposed to do is they're supposed to report all about Paul's activities. I mean, these are specific things right here. Paul says, they will report about my activities. Give them an update, what's going on with me. Next, they're going to deliver an oral report concerning Paul and his team. That's verse 4:8. So Paul says they're update you on my activities. They're going to tell about what's going on in Rome, his team, in chapter 4, verse 8. And that team would include Paul, Timothy, Tychicus, Onesimus, Aristarchus, Mark, and Jesus Justice. And then in 4:8 also, to encourage the hearts of the Colossians. One of the things they're supposed to bring is a message. Not only are they supposed to read and bring a missionary report and bring the monthly update, you know, of what's going on in the ministry, they're supposed to now encourage the people somehow. Say something. Not read the letter, but preach to them. Encourage them. They're going to tell you something of encouragement to keep this church going. And realize, in just a few years, we're talking a decade, this church will be under persecution from Nero. And then next one, last thing in chapter 4, verse 9, report everything that has taken place in Rome. Let me read verses 7, 8, 9, and you can pick those things out. It doesn't say clearly they're carrying the letter, but obviously they are. Report about Paul's activities, deliver an oral report concerning Paul and his team, encourage the hearts of the Colossians, and report everything. Here's verse 7 again. Tychicus will tell you all about the news about me, Paul. He is a dear brother, a faithful minister, and fellow servant. Important definitions for him. I am sending him to you for the express purpose that you may know about our circumstances, and there's that plural, our circumstances, the team, and that he may encourage your hearts. You know, that'd be some kind of a message he's going to bring to you. He is coming with Onesimus, and that's part of his assignment, is bring Onesimus back, our faithful and dear brother, and Onesimus is described faithful and dear brother, and as one of you, three things describe Onesimus: a faithful and dear brother. That means he is a believer and a good believer. And it says he is one of us. Now, what does that mean, one of us? Does it mean he's a native of Colossae? Or does it mean, meaning they know who Onesimus is. Do you have to be told from people from your hometown? Do you have to be told, hey, this guy's from your hometown? It's like, I know people from my hometown. So this could mean that Onesimus is from Colossae and they're being reminded that he's from Colossae. Or probably, if he's a slave, he's not from Colossae. He's from somewhere else. You don't enslave your neighbor, a neighbor citizen. They enslaved who? Captives from war, people that had been brought in from other places. So he's probably not from Colossae. So what does it mean he's one of you? I think a safe assumption is he is now one of you. He's now one of the believers in the Colossae church. When he left, he was not one of you. He's returning as one of you. So again, think about that. And here's the last thing that they're going to do. They will tell you everything that is happening here. So verse 7 through 9 is a description of what Tychicus, his assignment. So this is now Tychicus. So when Tychicus gets there, he knows these are the things Paul wants him to do. And you've got to believe that Tychicus and Paul have spent some time talking. Tell them this. Go over this. Find out about this. And then this is in the letter. So now it's documented. When Tychicus brings the letter, they read it. Oh, Tychicus, you're supposed to, if Tychicus forgets to do it, it's documented. This was your assignment from the Apostle Paul. You haven't told us this yet. So again, that's what Tychicus is going to do. Let's look at what Tychicus is described as. Three things. Where have I got that written down? If I got it written down here somewhere. Oh, I put it in the bullet point somewhere. I don't see it anymore. But anyway, you can see it right here. Tychicus will tell you the news. He is a dear brother, meaning he's a believer, a spiritual relative, a faithful minister. So, again, somehow he's a minister. Now, that doesn't mean that's his office or a gift, but he's a faithful servant. He's doing some kind of a ministry. And a fellow servant of the Lord. So he's a faithful minister to the people in whatever fashion he's a minister. And a fellow servant, the word servant is doulos, slave, in the Lord. So he's serving the Lord, serving people, and he's a faithful brother. So that's kind of, we kind of broke that down. Now, I want to look at the bottom of page one. Let's look at Tychicus. If we go to, this is a long, drawn-out story here. But go to Acts chapter 20, please. We come back. This is Tychicus. And his name just pops up here all of a sudden. Who's Tychicus? He's just a nobody in the New Testament. But actually, when you look at this right here, and this is really what I wanted to do tonight, was try and bring a couple of these guys to life. Because you know the stories. The stories that we're going to look at, you know the stories. But sometimes, including myself, we miss the characters besides Paul and Timothy. Then these other guys' names pop up that we can't pronounce. You say, oh, well, whoever. And then you realize their name keeps popping up. So here we go. We're in Acts chapter 20, verse 4. Acts chapter 20, verse 1. Here we go. When the uproar had ended, Paul sent for the disciples, and after encouraging them, he said goodbye and sent out for Macedonia. He traveled through the area, speaking many words of encouragement to the people, and finally arrived in Greece, where he stayed 3 months because the Jews made a plot against him just as he was about to sail for Syria. He decided to go back through Macedonia. He was accompanied by, and here's the names, Sopater, Aristarchus, he's going to pop up again here in a moment, Susudas, Gaius of Derbe, Timothy, Tychicus, and Trophimus from the province of Asia, or Tychicus, province of Asia, Asia, which would be Phrygia, which would be the city of Colossae. So now, they're coming right here. If I can draw a map very quickly, this is a very weak map. This is Jerusalem. This is Ephesus. Here is, over here, Corinth. Now, they have just come up here. They're going to come across. They're leaving Corinth. They've just left Corinth, and they're coming up to head to Jerusalem. They're going to stop by Ephesus on the way by. Now, when there's a plot, this right here, this leaving right here is Paul leaving Corinth after he'd spent 3 years in Ephesus. If you look in your Bibles in chapter 20, you go back to chapter 19, verse 23. You can see what's taking place right there. There is a riot. See that in verse 23 of chapter 19? There's the riot in Ephesus. That is at the end of the 3 years. Now, if I've got it detailed for you. I'm going to try and rabble through it. But on the top of page 2, and you know this story. I'm just trying to put it together for you. The details of what I'm going to show you is on the top of page 2. Paul has been in Ephesus for 3 years. During this time, he received a delegation from the Corinthians. You know this from 1 Corinthians. And there's problems. So he writes the letter of 1 Corinthians and sends it back to him with Timothy and tries to solve the problem. It doesn't work. Paul then has to take and visit them. It doesn't make it clear in the text. You can see the references there. But he talks about a visit. It appears he probably just sailed across the sea while he's in Ephesus for this 3 years. And pretty much had a come-to-Jesus meeting with him. Goes back and writes a second letter to him, which is what is called in the book of 2 Corinthians, is called the painful letter. It's one of those letters that Paul, when he writes about it, and I've got the text in there, when he writes it, he says, when I sent it, it bothered me. It's almost like one of those emails. You write the email and send it, and then you go, I shouldn't have sent that. And that's kind of the impression Paul gets, because he'd been over there, they weren't listening, they were rebelling against him, they're replacing his teaching, and he sent them a painful letter that he says, I wish I hadn't sent it, but after they got it, they ended up they repented. And so this painful letter. So he then, Titus is over here with Paul, and Paul sends Titus to follow this letter up. And probably sends a third letter that we don't know about, we don't have. We don't have this painful letter, and we don't have the Titus letter. But he sends Titus over here because, you can read this, Timothy comes back. Job unfinished. And so he sends Titus with apparently a third letter, and Paul doesn't know what's going on. And he's waiting this whole time. He's worrying about the Corinthian church. There's a riot is breaking out over here. The metalsmiths are coming against Paul here. And so Paul has to, after this riot in chapter 19, he has to flee. And he flees up here. And now we pick up 2 Corinthians. He comes up here, heading down to Macedonia and Greece, going to go to Corinth to check on Titus. And you know the story now, if you're with me. He comes up here. And he hasn't heard from Titus. He sent Titus over here with this third letter. And when he gets here, Titus is on his way back. And they meet in Macedonia. And Paul from Macedonia writes the fourth letter, what we call 2 Corinthians. And a lot of these details are scattered throughout that letter. Now, he comes down here, meets the church, and he hears good news. Titus says, they've repented. You're back. They'll let you speak. You've got a speaking engagement. And so he comes in here, and the church is back on track. He meets them. But there's a plot to us. The Jews, remember Thessalonica here, the Jews in Thessalonica, in Berea from Philippi, they're chasing him down, and there's an assassination plot. And that's what they're talking about right here in chapter 20. So between chapter 19 and 20, this is all taking place. And so now Paul is in here. I'm in chapter 20, verse 3. In Greece, it says he finally arrived in Greece. That's when he came down here with Titus after the Corinthians have accepted him. He stayed there a while. Well, it says right here, where he stayed for 3 months. He stayed in Corinth for 3 months, glad they received him back. Because the Jews made a plot against him just as he's about to sail for Syria. His intention was to get on a ship from Corinth, which was a seaport city, and sail to Jerusalem for the holidays. But the Jews say, we know what he's going to do. We'll kill him. So Paul says, we can't go this way. So they got to backtrack up through here. And that's where we pick up this name right here. I'm in verse chapter 20, verse 4. You can see the name Tychicus. Tychicus was with him at this point. And what basically happens is Paul sends his team across to Troas, kind of like they all travel together, and someone's probably dressed like Paul or something. And Paul's hanging back here in Macedonia. He sends his ministry team, including Tychicus, over here. And then Paul follows them, stops and preaches in Ephesus, and they head for Jerusalem, where he is arrested. Are you with me on that? That's a long story. But my whole point for saying that, this Tychicus was with Paul during this time in Ephesus. He was with Paul in Corinth. He was with Paul during this escape, trying to get Paul out of the city without being assassinated. He travels with him down to Jerusalem. And now I'm going to turn the page here. And it appears in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12, Paul sends Paul goes down here. He gets arrested. He gets brought back to Rome and put in prison, That's where he's writing this letter. And Tychicus is with him, and he sends him back to Asia Minor, right here to Colossae, with this letter. So Tychicus, this is not just an example. It's just not a guy that just shows up. He's been with Paul through a riot, possibly. He's been with Paul in Corinth. He's been on this assassination plot. He was with Paul when he went to Jerusalem, or he stayed back. Now, one more thing about him, and then we got to look at one more guy, and I got to rush through this. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12, Paul sends Tychicus to Ephesus during his second fatal imprisonment. So when Paul is over here in Rome, when he's going to get his head cut off, and Demas deserts him, he sends Tychicus back to Ephesus here to help Timothy. And so Tychicus is still with Paul in prison there. And then, if you don't mind me going on, I kind of like this stuff. I'm not sure if you do. I'm not sure if I'm communicating it or not. Gosh, I wish you'd ask me a question. Titus is down here in the Isle of Crete. And in Titus chapter 3, verse 12, Paul sends a letter, apparently from Corinth, down to Titus, encouraging him, telling him what to do there. And he says, I'm going to send you, and he gives him two names right here. He says, I'm going to send you either Tychicus or Artemas. And when I send one of them down to you here, you get on a boat and come meet me in the Nicopolis, which is a kind of a Mediterranean coastal city over on this side. And that's where he's going to winter there for one of his final winters. So anyway, Tychicus is still with him. He's going to be replacing Titus. So as surely as there is a letter to Titus and a letter to Timothy, there were letters to Tychicus. There's got to be letters sent. We don't have them. But Tychicus is going to possibly come down here. He was sent over here. He traveled with Paul throughout all this. Now, one more guy I want to look at here, and then I'll quit. In chapter 4 of Titus, or chapter 4 of Colossians, chapter 4, verse 10, the guy's name is Aristarchus. And I think what we'll do is I'm just going to look at these notes right here. And see if you can follow me on this. Aristarchus. I'm on page, I guess it's the second page, at the bottom. In fact, that's all it says on the bottom of the page. Very bottom word, Aristarchus. Turn the page. Now, Aristarchus is that Jew. This is even better. And again, this I would like to recreate that story for you and tell it to you better. But Aristarchus is a Jew, one of the three Jews with Paul yet in Rome. He is from Thessalonica. So remember when the riot broke out in Thessalonica and the Jews chased him out of town? Aristarchus was one of those Jews that had to make a decision. Either he's chasing Paul out, or he's converting and wondering, what is what I'm going to do? So Aristarchus, we can trace Aristarchus now. And if you're in the book of Acts, you know, we're going through it in church. We've read from in Corinth, he's read 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. That is Aristarchus. And Aristarchus is going to be with Paul this whole time. Here we go. Let me just read the, I've got a bullet point, the black, first black bullet point at the top of page 2. Let me just read this. Aristarchus is called a fellow prisoner, which is a reference to a prisoner of war. And then I've got a little arrow there. Let me just read this to you. I love to teach it to you, but I feel like I'm boring you with this and I'm rambling. It is reasonable to assume that Aristarchus has stuck with Paul from the Jewish uprising in Thessalonica that chased Paul out through the years of Ephesus, 3 years in Ephesus, that resulted in the riot in the theater that chased Paul out of town there. Through the Corinthian church rebellion, he was here with him here, all the way up through the assassination plot, all the way to Jerusalem when he gets to the Caesarea and Agabus, the prophet, comes out and takes his belt and ties his hand. Aristarchus is there. Sees Agabus, says, don't go. Paul goes, says, I'm willing to die. He goes with him, watches Paul get arrested because he brought a Gentile up on the Temple Mount. And no doubt people are suspicious because he's got Gentiles traveling with him. Is with Paul in Caesarea in his imprisonment, and we can document places where he is mentioned on this journey from Caesarea all the way on the trip all the way to Rome. And Aristarchus now is still with Paul in prison during this writing, and now he's referring to him as far as being a fellow prisoner. He's still with him. He's a prisoner of war. And he's been with him from Thessalonica all the way through these journeys. It's amazing, I mean, what this guy has seen. These aren't your typical, you know, what you think about a ministry or a Bible teacher or these guys are, they're running for their lives. They're in riots. They're fleeing cities. There's assassination. They're being shipwrecked. They're being arrested in Jerusalem, sent to Rome. And Aristarchus is still with him. All those details you can follow through in the scriptures. Well, I'm going to quit with that. There's a lot of things we could say about that, but it's the closing of the letter. I just get excited when you see a list of 12 names in the Bible that just seem to be like, another boring chapter. And then you start reading back, and these aren't just names. These are Paul's ministry partners and the things that they've gone through. And they're popping up in Ephesus. They're popping up in assassination plots. They're popping up in Caesarea. Just random times their names are mentioned. Yes, sir. Did they work? Well, you know, in the letters of the Thessalonians, he makes it very clear. He says, we served. He served as an example. We worked night and day. When he says we, he's talking about who? I mean, we think Paul and Timothy. But his ministry team, they would go to cities. And Paul's in Ephesus for 3 years. And what did he do? We know he worked. He had a job in Ephesus. And Paul's not, you know, there's one time he comes in. One time we know that he comes into the city of Corinth from Athens. He's by himself. And he finds Aquila and Priscilla and gets a job. And eventually the Macedonians send some money for him. But he came into that city alone. No ministry team. But other places we can see as we travel through this, Luke's with him. Timothy's with him. He's sending people coming. Titus shows up. Now we got these other names. And when he talks to the Thessalonians, when he writes to the Corinthians, when he writes to the Ephesians, in the book of Acts, it is clear Paul, he's receiving money from the Macedonians, and different people are supporting him, but not enough. I mean, he is working, and his ministry team is working the entire time. They do collect money. Now, here's the kicker. They do collect money. He writes to the Galatians, he writes to the Corinthians, he writes to the Philippians. He writes about collecting money. He says, well, if you set aside that money the first part of every week and make the collection, then when we come, we can pick the money up. But what's the money for? It's for the Jerusalem saints. And there's and part of it is just, he's and he, when the Corinthians are going to send some money, the Macedonians are sending some money, and part of the idea of sending money is, if we had collected money to give to Paul, then you would go with our money. And the Corinthians send someone. The Macedonians send someone. And they Paul apparently insisted, I'm not going to take the money. Someone's going to, so you see, it's a large amount of money. And they're traveling with it. So it's like they knew it got down there. And they met, and you can read in the book of Acts, they meet with the church of Jerusalem. They meet with the leaders, James, Jesus' brother. And they and it's a huge deal for Paul. Because this is a large amount of money from what people? The Gentile believers in Jesus Christ, the Jewish Messiah. I mean, you know in his mind the wheel, the prophetic wheels are spinning. We are doing what Isaiah, the Gentiles are bringing and blessing the Jews. And they're bringing this money in, and he'd had a Jew from Macedonia. He had a Jew from, a Gentile from Macedonia, a Gentile from Corinth, a Gentile from Ephesus. And they brought, this is what we'd like to present to the believing Christians or the believing Jews here. And they gave a huge amount of money. And that's why he was going down here. So, where'd they get their money? Sometimes they got money. People supported them. Clearly, they worked. Paul used the term night and day. Paul tells the Ephesians, he warns the Ephesians. He says, you know when we were with you, we didn't eat. He says, I worked all the time. He says, there's going to be people come, are going to come to get your money. They're going to come to get you. That's what they're coming for, is to fleece the sheep. He says, look out. And I'll tell you one other thing, and I'll quit. The early church, there was traveling ministers in the early church. And one of the and hospitality was a big deal. Hospitality, the traveling speaker would come. And that's what John, now you get into the writings of John, 1st and 2nd, 3rd John. 3rd John is brilliant on this subject, is traveling ministers and people accepting them or rejecting them. And there's this writing called the Didache, or Didache. It's from the first century. It seems legitimate. And in there is a rule. If someone comes and says they're a teacher of the Lord, he says, the rule is if they stay, put them up a night, give them a meal, let them preach, let them teach, and send them on their way with blessings. But if they want to stay a second night, no. Everybody should accept an evening meal, a place to sleep, a chance to preach. But you say, this is a pretty good gig. I might be here for a couple months. I feel the Lord is leading me to kind of, stay here. It's kind of like, yeah. Very clearly, no, they're a false teacher. Because the true teachers in that time did not go around collecting money for supporting themselves. Now, they'd accept support. Jesus accepted support. That's a good, where did Jesus get money? He took 12 guys on the road with him. It's like, where'd they get money? They were supported, but Jesus, remember, had worked up until he had been working this whole day. He had some kind of money somewhere. He wasn't, what I'm saying? Jesus wasn't this poor beggar. Jesus was a businessman who went into the ministry and asked 12 guys to come with him. So again, they accepted money, they worked, and they collected money. But when they collected money in the book of Acts, they collected money for a project, thus as blessing the poor Jewish believers that were under persecution in Jerusalem. Just interesting. There's a whole bunch of stuff there. And we got to quit. Thank you very much for your patience. We're going to do Philemon next week. Well, maybe for the next 6 months. It's not that big of a book. And then I think we'll move it. Well, I think we'll go to 1 Peter and do 1 Peter and 2 Peter, I think, is what we'll do next, if that sounds good. Got some fun things in Peter. Some good maturity things and some end time things. And questions before we go? Any questions? No one dare ask a question. You'll get ridiculed by the other students. Father, we thank you again for your truth. We thank you for your word. We ask that we again may hold these things dear, that we may do these things that you've called us to do. And I do thank you for the opportunity to serve you at this time in history, and ask that we would do it faithfully and that we do it effectively by the power of your word and by the power of your spirit. Again, we thank you, Father, for this chance to meet. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Hey, thank you very much.